When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, how's it going, guys? This is Zuby, of course, host of the Real Talk with Zuby podcast, and I wanted to drop a quick message here with a very quick and simple but important request. And this is that if you are someone who has been listening to this podcast for a long time, I would strongly encourage you to please support the podcast on Patreon at patreon.com/Zuby Music. I'm looking to expand the podcast this year. I'm also going to be working on a lot of new music this year, releasing new singles and a brand new album. And if you're someone who enjoys and appreciates my work as an independent artist, I would massively appreciate if you could support me financially on Patreon. Now, by doing so, you're going to also get access to the Team Zuby community, as well as other perks. We have a private chat group on Discord, so if you want to stay away from Twitter and all the wildness and craziness of social media, and just be talking to like-minded people, including myself, then you can join that. You can become a supporter from as little as $2 a month, and you can join the Discord for just $5 plus a month. Please check it out. That's patreon.com/ZubyMusic, Z-U-B-Y music. Would love to have you on board, and it'll really help me to grow. Thank you.
I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram, stunt me, destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam, put some respect on my name. Sick like a bang, click and I bang, y'all gon' remember the name.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. And today we have got on the founder of Beard Brand, and this is the one and only Eric Bandholtz. Welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
What's going on, Zuby? Good to see you.
Good to see you too, man. Good to see you too. At last, we've been hoping to do this for a while, and now we finally got you on, man. So how you doing? Happy New Year.
Yeah, happy New Year. I think I'm like a lot of people out there, you know, surviving, finding some wins here and there, and also like getting frustrated with things that are outside of our control. But, you know, ultimately trying to focus on the things I can control and things I can't, you know, like try to let it roll off my back.
100%, man. And so I've done a super brief intro right there, but for people who aren't familiar with who you are and what you do, tell them a little bit about you.
Yeah, so I'm Eric Bandholtz. I'm the founder of Beard Brand. Beard Brand is a men's grooming company. We sell products, obviously, for your beard, but we kind of go beyond that with your head, your hair, your body, pretty much from head to toe. You can get the same products and the same fragrance, which is pretty unique, and we call that ending scent confusion. So we bootstrapped that company about 8 years ago. We started in 2012. And we've just kind of grown organically from there. And we're really like mission based. Our mission is to make men awesome. And you can't see it, but right over there is a little flag that says keep on growing, which is our tagline. So nice. We really kind of focus on the individual and believe that when men take the time to invest in themselves, that they then, you know, can improve their family and improve their community, improve their careers, improve the relationships. And really through like a grassroots effort, we're going to make a better world by simply helping men love the man looking back at them in the mirror.
Awesome, man. And what made you want to, I know you've told the story multiple times in different interviews about starting your company and bootstrapping and all that, but what made you want to start a men's grooming product company? What was the seed for the idea?
Yeah, so going way back, I used to be a financial advisor at a mega corporation. And they wanted you to look a certain way, suit and tie, side part haircut, and of course, no beard. Among other things, like we could get into the whole like Federal Reserve and the corruption of like big banking in America. maybe for another time, but the job wasn't for me and I didn't really like identify with the style. So what happened is I ended up quitting my job there and I grew my beard out and started a different business at the time. And while going to networking events, everyone would call me like ZZ Top or Duck Dynasty or Grizzly Adams. And I love those dudes. Like they're super cool bearded guys, super cool men. But man, these hands were made for keyboards. Like I am not a really like outdoors burly guy. And what I realized by going to these beard related events that there are other guys out there like me who are a little more city oriented. So we ended up coining the term urban beardsman to kind of describe me and people like me. And what I wanted to do was really give urban beardsmen the tools they needed to feel confident about their beard, feel confident about their style, and really kind of embrace who they were as individuals. And that's where it started. So I wasn't so much like I wanted to get into grooming and I like grooming products and I want to make oils and stuff, but it was like, I want to help guys be themselves. I want to help guys like not feel like this happened to me at least. Like I felt this societal pressure to look and behave a certain way and behave in a way that I didn't really identify with. And I just wanted to be myself. You know, I think it's silly. Like if you grow facial hair, it doesn't make you any better or worse of an employee. It's just like growing your head hair. And I just wanted to change and shift that perception of what it meant to be a bearded guy. You can still be the Grizzly Adams and the ZZ Tops and the Duck Dynasties, but you can also be like a lawyer and a doctor and an entrepreneur, a musician, and you know, a business person, creative. And that's really where we wanted to start. And back in 2012, like no one had facial hair. So it was fun, like trying to show the world how it's okay to have facial hair.
That's interesting, man. I mean, you said something there that's really interesting. You were talking about you felt like society was pushing you in a certain way in terms of both how you should look, but also in terms of how you should behave. And I think that living in the modern Western world, this whole concept and question about masculinity is something that certainly over the last couple of decades has sort of become a conversation topic on multiple sides of the aisle, you know, in society and culture and politics. You know, you have people talking about toxic masculinity. Mm-hmm. You have people, you know, just asking what is masculinity in the year 2021? How is that defined? You know, what's the role of a man? I think if you look historically, it was always very, very obvious, right? The gender roles were a lot more explicit and clear and defined. And a lot of that was for basic needs of survival. But with us now living in, very comfortable societies, those lines are getting a bit more blurry. So what does masculinity mean to you personally?
We take probably like a little bit different spin than most people out there. First of all, we love men. Like we're going to blatantly say that we think men are awesome. Our mission is to make them awesome, not because they're not awesome, but because I think there's always room for improvement. We kind of have like a growth mindset at Beard Brand. So really like masculinity to me is going to be different than our customers. It's going to be different than my business partner, different than the team members here. And we kind of really like to focus on the individual. Mm-hmm. And it's like you as an individual know what you need to do to become better. You know, like, you know, the steps that you need to make, whether it's tackling demons in the past or whether it's, you know, getting in shape and lifting, whether it's eating right, whether it's, you know, working on your relationships and your marriage and all that. So what we want to do is help encourage people to become better versions of themselves mm-hmm. through that self-investment. And I don't care, you know, frankly, like I have viewpoints, personal viewpoints of certain things, but I don't really care who you are or how you identify or how you get there or what your big plan is. What I care about is you're loving the person looking back at you in the mirror and you're working on growing.
100%, man. 100%. I wanted to actually rewind a little bit because, as I said before, I know you've talked a lot about your business story, but I'm curious to learn a little bit more about you and your life story. So we started from your corporate job, but of course, prior to that, you've got a couple of decades of life, I imagine, prior to getting involved in the corporate world. So just tell us a little bit more about your background and growing up and all that.
Yeah, so I grew up in the South, South Carolina, and I my parents are still married. I have two loving parents, so I had a very I'm very fortunate to have a sheltered life. You know, I didn't face a lot of adversity as a child. I did go to public schools in South Carolina, And there's a saying in South Carolina that is, thank God for Mississippi, because in the terms of academic performance, South Carolina was always one ahead of Mississippi. So it's not like I went to you know, Boston public schools or something like that. But so I went to public school, ended up going to University of South Carolina, go Cocks, and studied. I think I'm the one guy who has a degree, who's using his degree. My degree is in marketing and management, focused on entrepreneurship, mm-hmm. and then a minor in retail. So I've got an e-commerce business, which is pretty much to the T what you could have. So I was able to pick up a few things in college, but you know, I'll kind of talk about schooling in a little bit. But from there, I like got into sales, and I was kind of like a journeyman salesperson. And then politically, like I've always been, you know, the whole what do they call it? Socially liberal, fiscally conservative. I'm a libertarian. And then like that libertarian kind of evolved. And I became more and more like, I just wanted to be less and less hypocritical. And that kind of led me towards like voluntarism, mm-hmm. And free markets and capitalism and avoidance of force and just voluntary agreements and things like that. So, but schools, man, like I'm not a big fan of public schools. I'm not really even a big fan of college, especially how they're set up now. I think there might be better options for kids in 2020s than when we were growing up.
Can you go into that a little bit more? Because I think I agree with you. And I think it's an interesting conversation, actually, because we're both university graduates, but we both feel that same way. I feel like in the past 10 years, especially, certainly in the UK, I think in the US as well, the sort of value proposition and opportunity costs of higher university education, let me be more specific, I think it's shifted very drastically from what it was even when I was in university.
Well, so growing up in the South, I remember, and my takeaways from the education I learned was a celebration of capitalism. And granted, I kind of like my early years were the 80s and then the 90s. 80s and 90s is when I went to primary school. So I feel like they're still just kind of on the end of like the Cold War and, you know, anti-Russia and capitalism versus communism. So like to me, capitalism was kind of indoctrinated as a child, and I really bought into it. Mm-hmm. And then as I look at it now, I feel like there's this disdain for capitalism, which blows my mind, because I feel like the term capitalism has been used to describe corporatism, which mm-hmm. is the relationship between the state and of course private companies, giant businesses. Whereas to me, capitalism is free markets and it's voluntary association and it's private property. I believe strongly in private property. And from there, anything beyond that is a bastardization of capitalism. It's, you know, like everything's on a scale. Nothing's black and white. And then college, too. I think that I was able to go to college and they had a they called it the Life Scholarship, where they rolled out this like new lottery thing, and the lottery system paid the tuition for my college. So my tuition was covered through the scholarship. And then, you know, again, I was fortunate that my parents were willing to pay for my room and books. So I was able to graduate college with no debt at all. Yep. But nowadays kids are graduating like 60K or 100K or, you know, 150K. Yep. And I'm like, you may never see the results on that, especially if you're, you know, ending up as a barista at Starbucks. So
it's crazy.
My business partner here at Beard Brand, he knew college wasn't right for him. He left and he was able to like get started in entrepreneurship way earlier than me. And I feel like schools set me back 10 years, because what they taught me was to do as you're told, go to authority, you know, like just do whatever people tell you and you'll be successful in life. And I didn't realize that, was, in my opinion, especially now for small businesses, I don't want to hire anyone who wants to do what they're told. I want to hire people who can find problems and solve problems. Like I want to hire people with, you know, entrepreneurial mindset, and I can't find them, like, cause they're not teaching them in schools anymore. And it's just like an archaic model that's propped up by, you know, special interests. And I would love to see like the destruction of it. And our girl, she goes to a special school in Texas that's kind of like project-based focus, kind of entrepreneurial focus.
Okay.
Where I feel like, she, you know, really my goal for her is that she still has a love of learning when she graduates. That's mm-hmm. that's the one thing I want from her, because I felt like my love of learning was squashed out of me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting. I think it's fascinating because people talk a lot about the cost of education. And if you think about it properly, by definition, education is cheaper than it's ever been, right? It's never been cheaper and more accessible to learn what you want. We've got YouTube, podcasts, social media. You have all these things, like you said, Khan Academy, Udemy, all of these online platforms where you can learn truly valuable skills, whether it's programming or copywriting or drop shipping or starting a clothing company, starting a music label, like starting what, you know, whatever. You can learn all of these skills for free or for cheap online, you know, how to become a personal trainer, whatever it is. And I think people are so stuck in the model of higher education and education in general, meaning the school system and the university system, that they haven't sort of switched in their head yet to realize, look, education is not simply going to university. You can educate yourself, and you can educate yourself through different means and mechanisms, which didn't exist a couple of decades ago. And I hope that shifts. Also, as someone who, you know, we're both free market advocates, that would also bring the cost of the universities down, right? Because they keep jacking up their prices while providing less and less value. And that's because they're so oversubscribed, because people are still stuck in this idea that you have to go and spend all these dozens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of pounds or dollars to get a so-called education. And a lot of people are coming out worse off. And then they've had the opportunity cost of spending that 3 or 4 years getting into debt when they could have been getting into profit, and they could have been learning, and they could have been, you know, building something. So I think it's kind of crazy.
I really feel like the jobs that are more linked with the government. Mm-hmm. So wherever there's like a higher link between the government, like lawyers, doctors, and like the whole, you know, regulations behind that, you know, of course, like teachers, anything like this, like you have to go through the system to get a job there. Mm-hmm. But like jobs and roles that aren't related to government at all, like software developers, you know, like engineers, business people, you know, creatives, like these type of roles, like you don't need any kind of formal education, because the people hiring, they don't care. Like the first thing I do when hiring a creative role is look at your portfolio. Yeah. I don't give a damn what school you went to or what theories, you know. What I give a damn about is the things that you can do, you know, and it's the same.
Can you do the work? Can you do the
Yeah.
Work?
Yeah. Can you do the work? And schools aren't teaching that. They're not helping you understand that you have to figure out on your own how to be amazing. No one's going to tell you how to do it.
If you ran a school or a university, how would you do it?
Yeah. So, I mean, a plug to the school system that my daughter's in, because I would set a franchise up for them. It's called Acton, A-C-T-O-N. Mm-hmm. And it's very like freedom based, very entrepreneurial based. And they even have an MBA program that's like real world building a business and like just analyzing case studies and learning that way. So, I would just go with that. I think it's probably the best school system that we've run into. The people that we have one, Eleanor has one classmate whose parents, I think they interviewed like 200 different schools around the world. Mm. And the Acton school was the one that they chose, because it was really like of all those 200, it was the best model for, well, at least for their kids. Yeah. So, yeah, look into that Acton Academy, and they are like aggressively growing. So they have chapters all around America. And I do think they're even starting to get chapters internationally as well.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. I'll definitely look into that. I think that's one area of life where I'm very much like, I could define myself as a progressive when it comes to like the education system. Cause I do think it's really archaic and stuck in the old way of doing
it. But is that progressive? I mean, I feel like that's progressives want to keep it the way it is and have the entrenched, like.
Yeah, well, you know, these days liberal means conservative means liberal, progressive means regressive means. I don't know what the labels mean, but by its proper definition, I would say that.
And really, I think it's just adapting the marketplace, right? Like, because the needs of businesses are changing, mm-hmm. where you used to have like the manufacturing systems where you did need cogs in the wheel. Yep. But now you need minds. You need minds that can think for themselves.
Yeah, man, 100%. So I'm curious to talk a little bit more. We were talking a little bit about masculinity before. What do you think is the current state of masculinity in the Western world, and where do you think it's kind of going? I feel like there are a lot of sinister forces trying to undermine boys and men and male-female relationships as well. I feel like they're kind of trying to undermine everybody. I feel like there's forces and movements trying to undermine women. There's stuff trying to undermine men. There's stuff trying to, you know, pathologize boys, pathologize male-female relationships. There just seem to be a lot of strange cultural and social forces floating around out there aggressively. I don't know exactly what their goal is, but they seem to be wanting to stir up some trouble. So I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a touchy subject, and it's one that we talk a lot about here because it's something that's important. You know, my answer and my wife's answer are going to be completely different. And my wife is diametrically opposed to me in almost every political and
that's interesting.
Yeah. So I mean, I think to have a relationship where you see completely differently. But we've been married 14 years, two kids, respect. You know, I have respect for her, and I can, you know, to a certain degree, understand where she's coming from, even though I don't agree with her. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like, you know, like from my perspective, at least like on the Twitter, there's almost like an attack of being like a white guy. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really feel good because, like, you know, you make sacrifices for your family, you work hard, you know, some people are putting literally their lives on the line by working these jobs, and you don't feel like you're getting respect. And I understand that there are, you know, kind of like systemic, like structures that, you know, like have inherent biases. I don't think you're ever going to escape biases. I think every single individual has biases. I think it's kind of ingrained in humanity to be able to quickly do that. And it's a survival trait. Sure. Will we ever be able to work through that? Hopefully, maybe, if you become aware of it. But I do, yeah, I think, you know, if I'm thinking about being a 6-year-old boy now and trying to grow up and trying to take advantage of a lot of the traits that I have, it may be challenging. I'm like, it's easy for me because I'm a straight white man, who's tall, who's fit, who's, you know, successful. Like I was asking my wife, I'm like, what do you think of the patriarchy? And she's like, she's like down with the patriarchy and da da da. I'm like, hey, my wife is Anne. I'm like, Anne, you realize that I am the patriarchy. Like I am exactly.
she married the patriarchy.
she married. And like, she's a stay at home mom. And, you know, like we're living like traditional gender roles. Yeah. And we're okay. Like the reason I'm successful at Beard Brand is because my wife worked when we started and she had the income coming in to support that ramp up period. So like the roles were reversed and I wasn't the breadwinner for a period of time. And I was even like a stay at home husband, you know, a house husband for a period of time. So like what I want to have is a world where if someone chooses to be, you know, like their roles are reversed, that it's okay. Like that as an individual, you'd be treated the same way as any other individual. But I don't want to do that in a way that's damning anyone who chooses the alternative.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like this with feminism, where they attack women who choose to go like the stay-at-home mom route, because being a mother, giving birth to children and like managing a family,
it's so
first of all, it's probably one of the most important things to society.
Yes.
And then it's hard as hell. It's so hard. Like there's no way I could do it. Like the things that my wife does, I have no capabilities at that at all. And on two factors, I want to say, if you're the type of guy who's really good at that and you want to be a stay at home dad and raise a family, like, I'm cool with that. I'm power to you. And if you're the woman who wants to do that, I'm power to you because it's super hard. And then if the roles are reversed, I'm also okay with that. Yeah. But don't try to put everyone into your preference for life or society is kind of where I stand.
Yeah, man. No, 100%, man. I mean, like when I think about it, by the time my mom was my age, she had 5 kids. like all five of us have been born by, I have no kids yet, right? And I'm like, man, when my mom was my age, she already had the 5 of us. And I'm just like, now I'm that age, I'm like, I've always respected my mom. I'm I'm like, extra respect. Like, that's
I mean, my wife will leave for an hour to go to Target or something. I'll have like the two kids and I'm like, and they come, she comes home and I'm like, they're alive. So, I mean, I can't imagine your mom with five little ones. That's wild.
Yeah, no, it's remarkable. And, you know, one of my biggest issues with I've got a lot of issues with the modern feminist movement, but one of the biggest ones is that I think it's actually kind of like sexist against women. I think it's sexist against both men and women. I think it tries so hard to force women to compete and be like men rather than embracing femininity and actually embracing what it was initially supposed to be, which is like, you know, liberation, right? Freedom. Like you're saying, if a woman wants to take a more traditional route and be a stay-at-home mother and raise, like, why should that be shamed, right? That should be fine. I thought the whole idea was supposed to be about, like, autonomy and choices, right? So if you want to take that route, you can take that one. If you want to take that one, you can take that one. And you're not going to be shamed and you're not going to be demonized. So I find it funny how oftentimes it's the people who call themselves so-called feminists who are the ones doing that demonization of other women. And then, of course, doing their demonization of men as well. And it's, the whole thing just strikes me as very hypocritical.
Well, I want to kind of add on to that, because my business partner, she's a woman. She describes herself as a feminist. And and I would agree with her version of feminism, which is just like equal opportunities, right? Sure. Like you treat a woman in the office the same way you would treat a man. Like if you're at a conference table and there's, you know, five guys there and one girl, the assumption isn't that the woman is automatically going to be the secretary, like things like that. Like
that's just politeness. Like that's not, you know, because oftentimes when someone says, oh, well, feminism just means you think men and women should have like equal rights and be treated fairly, I'm like, maybe by its original definition, it meant that. But in the modern interpretation, it doesn't, you know, like what's the word? Yeah. You know, I often say like, what's the word for someone who thinks that Black people and white people and Asian people should be treated equally and fairly? You don't need a word for it, right? It's just like, that's just being like a modern, decent human being. Maybe back 100 years ago, it was more of a radical concept. So you needed like a specific word for it, right? Because the general populace didn't have that attitude. But like now that 99% of people do, I'm kind of like, yeah, well, everyone thinks men and women should have. I'm not seeing people advocating for women to have their voting rights revoked or for like them to, you know, right? Like I'm not seeing that. So
yeah. And I want to be clear, like I'm not a woman, so I don't know what women go through. Right. I don't know kind of like the nuances, just like I'm not a Black guy or like I am who I am. So I only know my perspectives and I have my own inherent biases.
I identify as a woman sometimes though.
That's right. I forgot.
So I can speak to both sides of the equation.
Yeah. is it pretty good being a woman?
I'll tell you what, my career really started taking off once I identified as a woman.
There you go.
And I didn't take a pay cut either.
I think you commented on this before, and this was a like in my like I always have this route to like, how do I not be a hypocrite? Like how do I like follow this pathway and be logically consistent? And I was thinking about gender and how it's now kind of appropriate where you can identify as a different gender. And my wife's a genetic counselor, so I kind of understand some of the genetic components behind some of these things. Like there's a Klinefelter syndrome, which is like, I think it's like XXY, where you essentially have like your chromosomes are built differently. And like, how do you identify and where do you sit on the left and right spectrum of gender, or try to fit it, put everyone in a box. And like, I understand that messaging. I just went on a ramble and I don't even know where I'm going now.
Oh, no,
but anyway,
it happens. It happens. But Eric, look, we're in a new year right now. It is 2021. What are your thoughts about this year? What are your thoughts coming into this year? Because we've been living through, and we still are living through, some very weird times. As I record this, I'm in the UK. They've put the whole country back on full-scale lockdown as of about a week ago. And it's just weird. I mean, this has been going on now for about 10 months. It looks like in every different city, every different state, every different country. The situation's different. The rules are different. There's places where it looks like, you know, it looks like places like Florida, it's fully open and you can go to nightclubs and music concerts and stuff. And then in Texas, maybe you're somewhere halfway. It looks like California is pretty hard locked down. UK is like Alcatraz. So what is going on here? And what are your general thoughts?
Yeah,
on it?
I mean, well, a couple of things like my core values are freedom, hunger, and trust. That's what the company's core values are. That's kind of how we see the world and how we want to the kind of world we want to be in. So in my opinion, more freedom is always good, even though it may come with like negative things that happen with it. So I'm hopeful that we can find more freedom in the year. I think, you know, talking with Carlos, who works at Beard Brand and who you know, he seemed really down and he kind of felt like America was going to come into a lockdown. And I kind of feel like, I don't know, like the feeling in here in Texas, at least, is like it doesn't feel like it's going to get any more locked down or any more worse. It feels like Americans have gone through that. Mm. They're not going to accept any harsher lockdowns, at least here in Texas. Mm-hmm. Other states maybe are a little more open to it. You know, but ultimately, like with the election, I can't control the outcome. Sure. So all I can do is control how I respond to it. So as much as possible, I try to remind myself to live in the present, mm-hmm. and what's going on today and what I have control over and all the things that maybe I need to know and be aware of, but not let it consume me. So, and I've gone through like periods of like a couple of weeks where I was depressed or down or gloomy. And it was actually like building my home gym that helped me get out of that.
Yeah, man. The gym shutting down is a big one. It's a big one.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, obviously for me, but for, you know, for millions of people, I mean, it's just insane. You know, this is the so-called in the name of public health. And it's just nutty to me that you're talking about public health and you're talking about, you know, saving lives and whatever, and you're shutting down all of the outlets, you know, you're shutting down the outlets that people need to be healthy. And, you know, people's physical health is declining. People's mental health is really deteriorating. Like people are not, there's just a bad energy. I feel it online. I feel it when I go outside. There's just like this negative, there's just like a black cloud over everybody. Like obviously it's 0 degrees outside, the temperature and the darkness is not helping, but it's just gloomy. Everyone's just a bit more angry. People are snapping at each other quicker. People are, you know, treating everyone like they're diseased, taking these weird round wide berths around each other. People are afraid to shake hands, not seeing smiles because people have their faces covered. The whole thing is just very dystopian to me. Like I do not like it. Like I cannot, it's really, really like been affecting me like the past 8 months. Like after the first 2 months, I was like, okay, like enough of this. Like this is insane and it's not making sense. And then they just keep like slamming down, changing directions. It's very, very frustrating.
As an entrepreneur, like the world likes to see option A and option B and like give you a false choice between the two as solutions, like lockdown or not lockdown. And as an entrepreneur and as a contrarian, like I like to see different kind of solutions. So like my solution would be like more exercise, more sunlight, you know, more like build up that immunity. How do you get people healthier? How do you help them eat right? How do you, you know, take solutions to that, mm-hmm. which, you know, like maybe aren't quite as seen, but have such a big impact on people. I would much rather go that direction, but no one even thinks about that. You know, it's just the, do I make it look like I'm trying and I get bonus points for that? And even if it works or it doesn't work, you know, they don't care if it works.
That's what's insane though. Cause this is the third lock. Really it's the fourth lockdown, but it's like, if the lockdowns have been working, like then you don't need to do another one. And if they're not working, what makes you think that the fourth time around, it's going to suddenly, okay, this fourth time we got it, right? We're going to do it the fourth time and suddenly we're going to crush this thing. And it doesn't make sense. And I think even in the UK, I mean, now they've got the vaccine. I was reading today that I think over 1.5 million people have had the vaccine so far. So I'm kind of like, well, if the vaccine is there, just prioritize it to elderly and vulnerable people to start with. And then, you know, obviously I think everything should be voluntary. and let people live. You know, there's more to life than not contracting COVID, right?
I think in my mind, like, if there's truly like this terrible disease that's going to kill everyone, you don't need to tell them to lock down.
Yeah, exactly.
You just show them the data and the science that says, hey, avoid people.
Exactly.
Or else you like here's all the people that died who didn't avoid people. Mm-hmm. People are going to do it on their own. They don't need to be forced to do it. So the fact that you have to force people to do something means it's probably not the appropriate level of response for people.
And when you see the people who make the decisions breaking the laws as well, then that's how you know it's so clear. Yeah. It's like, okay, you guys don't believe what you're selling. You don't believe what you're saying. You
know? But people are scared now. Like they're legit scared. Yeah. And it's weird. I've never seen people so afraid before. No. And it's divisive, you know, it's like built this new thing. Like even between my wife and I, like we see the world differently.
Really? Yeah.
And you know, like we've had a lot of, you know, arguments and conflict about what we believe and how we should handle things and how my daughter should handle things. And it's just frustrating, you know, that we have to even have this conversation. But, you know, I think there's been a lot of divorces during this time period because of that. Like,
You know what? I do have a question, actually, as a man who's been married for 14 years. And based on what you've said, of course, you don't need to go into anything more personal than you'd want to. But how do you manage having a very different political or ideological perspective to your wife? Because I know that is something that I know it happens, but actually I don't know that many. If I think of like couples I know, they tend to be, whichever sort of side they're on, they tend to be fairly aligned. So what are your sort of tips and tricks to managing that? How does it work? Because I'm saying this honestly, because I don't know if I would be able to, I don't know if I'd be able to do it personally.
It's certainly challenging, and we've certainly had our arguments over politics over the years. I think a couple things, they come back to I can't control Anne, my wife, right? You know, I can only control me, and I can only control how I react to things that she believes in. And then I think about, like, you know, my political beliefs as like a voluntarist, no one's like that, right? You know, if I had to like find someone who's right in line with my political beliefs, like there would be like three women in America. That would be my option. So like, I don't think anyone's ever going to completely agree 100% on your political view.
Sure.
So if that's a requirement, then you're writing everyone off. So where we do align is like respect for each other, and you know, we're not attacking. And then we do have like shared insight on, we both work hard, we both, you know, manage our money well. But she's also like, I'm a non-believer, and she's, you know, she's a believer. So we're different in like all the big ways that they say not to be. Yeah. But I'm also okay, like, because I don't really believe in the political process. Like, you know, I don't think her vote is really going to affect me anyway. You know, it's like, unless she started spending like thousands of dollars for political contributions, which she doesn't, that would be the only thing that would probably upset me. But her vote, like, I don't think votes matter, and I don't participate in voting and you know, stuff like that. So
yeah, no, it's really interesting. I always like to you know, make mental notes on certain things and just be like, okay, how do people
reconcile this? I'll speak for my wife. She makes it work because I'm just stunningly gorgeous with a great beard and hair, and you know, you just can't one up this at all.
There you go. So such a mess. Just become like the ultimate man, and
and for clarity, that's not why she's married to me at all.
The beard does help though. I put a list out with some recommendations for young men a couple weeks ago, and grow a beard was on there. That seemed to be the most controversial item on the list. Yeah, a lot of people were questioning the beard advice, but
it's a great experience, especially if you grow for a year, because like if you grow for a year, your whole look is completely changing. Like a scrub, you know, scruffy beard, or a mustache, or like this length beard, or like a really long beard, you're like completely different personas. And it's really interesting to see how different people react to you in society. And it also is like different from like a perspective, like when I have a beard, I feel much more confident. I'm a lot more likely to call out bullshit. Before that, I really didn't feel that kind of like strength. So I do think there's a lot of, I mean, I think every guy should try growing a beard, whether or not they like it or not, but they should try to grow one out and see what it's like for them.
Yeah, man. Agreed. 100% guys. So any man listening here, if you don't already have a beard
or a woman, if you're a woman who can grow a beard, grow one out. There are some women who grow beards out there are customers. So like,
it'll definitely change your life, whether it'll be positive or negative. Like as a man, I think it'll be a definite positive. As a woman, try
it'll be challenging.
Get back to me. You know, you'll experience something. I don't know. No guarantees there.
Well, I mean, for us, it's like embracing who you are, right? If you do nothing, the default self is beard. True. Right. You have to do something to not have a beard. Mm-hmm. So it's really like embracing who you are, what comes out of your face, what comes out of your hair. And really like going back to what I said earlier, love the person looking back at you in the mirror. Like that's the big thing for me is how do we help people doing that? And it's a lot of guys will be like, I want a thicker beard or full beard, or I want it to be this or less patchy. Mm-hmm. And it's like, dude, let me tell you, the moment you can love your beard as it is when things really start getting great. And then you can find beard styles that work with your growth patterns and kind of work with what you got rather than changing who you are.
No doubt. Well, we're talking to a beard expert right here. So what are some tips on, there's a young man listening to this right now and he needs some tips on growing or managing a beard. So what are your top tips from Eric Banholtz from Beard
Banholtz? I like that.
Banholtz. What are your top tips on growing and managing a beard?
Well, we've created like over 1,000 videos on our YouTube channel. So if you need anything specific, just go to YouTube and type in beard brand, you know, whatever beard thing you can think of. But for the big things that we kind of run into are, you know, like for growing a beard, you got to give it time. And time is typically going to be like 30 to 90 days of growth before you trim it or shave it up. And that's really going to give you insight into what you can grow, because not all the beard hairs grow at the same speed. And then product from day number one, it helps the growing experience much better. Your beard's going to be less itchy. It's going to smell nice. It's going to be more tame. It's going to look nice. You're going to be able to get away with having that facial hair, the new facial hair. And then, like I already talked about, you can't compare your beard to others. You have to start to embrace your own. And then find inspiration from people who have similar growth patterns to you and use those as like kind of beard, you know, idols or whatever, beard targets to grow into, rather than, you know, like looking at my beard as a red beard and wishing that you with a dark black curly beard wish you had hair. Like that's not going to work. So
yeah, no, I don't think our beards would work too well switch around.
No. And then I mean, it's just like from there you can go like a little more advanced, like on the styling techniques and, you know, how to tame the mustache and using a blow dryer to really kind of tame it. So there's some advanced stuff out there as well, but those are kind of like the highlights.
Awesome. So they should check out the YouTube channel, subscribe to it, Beard Brand on YouTube. I've checked out multiple videos on there and got some decent tips from it. So no doubt.
Oh, good. Thank you. Thank
you. One thing I really love that you guys have done is you've really embraced social media very well, which is something that a lot of companies don't do. I think newer companies tend to be better at it than older ones. But how did you go about building the following on social media, especially with YouTube? Because you've got over a million subscribers on there. So what gave you the idea to pursue the social media path? And then what sort of steps did you take to go about doing it?
Yeah, so I would love to say I had like this great big master plan and vision that we executed flawlessly. But the reality is when we launched Beard Brand, it's completely bootstrapped. I started with a $30 investment into a Shopify, you know, store and an order from a beard oil manufacturer at the time. And every dollar we made, we put back in the business. So when you have no dollars and you want to get the voice out, what do? You do things that are time intensive. Yep. So for us, that meant Tumblr, which no one uses anymore, mm-hmm. but Tumblr, YouTube, and our blog. And fortunately, those were, first of all, we are kind of like the first company in the space to really talk about beard care and managing beards and took like beards seriously. Most people was just kind of like a joke mm-hmm. or kitschy. And so we took it serious and we gave serious advice with, you know, like with humor and stuff. But And then we just did a lot, you know, and you learn from it. You see what people say. I created a video on this and I'd get comments. Well, could you do it on this or do it on that? Mm. And then I'd make a video on that. So it kind of was just like a product of the needs of our audience and wanting to serve them. And I run into YouTube has great analytics. So you look at the analytics and see what videos are resonating, which ones people are watching, and try to create those, but create them better. Mm. And that's kind of the direction that we went over the, you know, the past 8 years. It's been a long journey, but it's been a lot of ups and downs. We're currently in a down with our YouTube channel. So trying to figure out how to like bust through that and get it back going up. And
YouTube is weird because, you know, how it decides to feed your videos is very random. You can have a video that's like performing really, really well, and then one day it just stops getting views, and your channel just, you know, like your channel's growing at a certain rate, and then it just stops or it just slows down. You're like, okay, what do I do here? I think they're constantly switching up their algorithms, so I think there's an element of just luck and timing in there. Yeah.
And what worked for us in 2017 when we had a lot of growth doesn't work for us now, you know, like, so we're trying to recreate our production workflow and how we produce things, and, you know, try to create content that resonates with the audiences out there. So it's definitely challenging, definitely hard, and it's always evolving, always adapting. But if it's not social media, it's business. You've always got to be able to do that. And my apology to all the listeners. I'm right by the highway here at the Beard Brand office, so there are sirens going by.
That's all good, man. Which platform has been the most effective one for you in growing your business? Would you say it's been YouTube or another one?
Yeah, I would say YouTube's been a big part. I think we do a post-purchase survey, and 40% of our customers first heard about us through YouTube. So yeah, I'd say that's definitely been a big one for us. But we've you know, I don't like Facebook and Instagram. I don't like Zuckerberg. So I've de-zucked my phone, and but we still like advertise on there. My team advertises on there. And I think it's a good way for us to get in front of people from a paid acquisition standpoint. Mm-hmm. And then I personally just like Twitter. You know, I had a bigger following on Instagram, but I didn't enjoy it. Yeah. So
Twitter's more fun.
Twitter
is chaos, but it's. I think it's. I don't know.
You've cracked that nut, man. Like I haven't cracked the nut yet. I had one tweet go viral where I said it's rude to ask guests to take their shoes off in their house, and that went like super viral.
That's
for
interesting.
Me. And yeah, that was fun. It was fun to be, and of course I got ratioed and all that. No one agreed with me.
Oh gosh, yeah, the viral season at this stage, like I get at least like two or three a day, so I'm just like, okay, let me let that one just go off and do what it does. Like I'm not going to even read the mentions or the notifications.
Well, you know, one thing I would advise people who want to get into the world of creating is like, if you create something that doesn't hit or is negative, just create more content, you know, like just keep on doing it, create ones that are better than the last one. And I don't delete old posts. You know, I just move forward. Mm-hmm. You can go through my Twitter feed and find probably some very terrible things I've said over the years, if you want to. I think it's mostly like you know, similar, but like, yeah. I mean, it's terrible for me. I want to say like terrible in the whole grand schemes of things. Yeah. But
that's all good, man. We're not worried. Guys like us aren't worried about being canceled. The beard prevents the cancellation.
It's funny because even yesterday I tweeted something. It was a joke. I said, you know, busy day at work. What did I miss? And then like I got a direct message from someone who's like, hey man, I've seen a couple people say this kind of stuff, and you're going to get canceled as like the rich white guy who's out of touch. And I'm like, okay, well if this is the tweet that gets me canceled, it gets me canceled. You know, like. Yeah. I'm lucky my business partners are like, you can say whatever you want to say, you know, because they believe in me. What my values are and my philosophies. And I want to do good for the world. I'm not out here trying to like divide the world and tear people down. I'm trying to help elevate. And if people can't, you know, if I end up saying something that gets us canceled, then so be it. You know, like,
Some people take the world too seriously, man. People need to relax and just have a sense of humor about certain things, like especially on social media. I think, again, I do think like all these lockdowns and all this other stuff is having a big impact on people's psyche.
Oh yeah.
But with Twitter, just in general, anyway, man, there's just a lot of angry, malcontent people on there, and you've got to just kind of accept that. And
well, didn't get to. Didn't like the Twitter like recommend like how to use Twitter was like have clear, concise, and controversy was like the third one. So it's like their whole algorithm's designed for you to say things that are controversial and get people riled up and get people fighting each other. And I think it's terrible. I wish they would change the algorithm to be more supportive and loving and make the world better. But, you know, they're trying to make money.
Fair enough, man. What do you have planned for? What do you have planned for 2021, man? Anything big coming up this year?
Yeah, I mean, 2021 is like a super, super stoked year for us because over the past 8 years, we've had this vision of having multiple products available in multiple fragrances, which is really, really, really hard to do. So we have like 12 different products, all available in 6 different fragrances and 2 different price points. And it was all building up to this concept called scent confusion. And we talked about it earlier. Scent confusion is when you wear one product for your head hair shampoo, body soap, one product for your beard, and you end up smelling like you walk through a drugstore cologne aisle. And we wanted to end that. We wanted to end scent confusion. So pretty much your head hair shampoo, your body bar, your shave soap, your beard oil, beard wash, styling products, deodorant, all these products you can now get, all the grooming basics for guys you can get in the same fragrance. So it took us 8 years to get to that. And we finally, with the launch of our deodorant, was our last product to kind of kill that. Or build out that line. So this year's just been like hitting on scent confusion, bringing awareness to that and hopefully helping guys who have struggled with that before, you know, find a product line that serves them. And then we'll have like a couple of like limited edition collaborations along the years and some unique products. And I've got a podcast as well, an e-commerce podcast show that I'll try to grow a little bit. And, I don't know, just get better at the things that we do is kind of been our motto for the past couple of years.
That's awesome, man. And for anyone who's listening to this, whether they're an aspiring entrepreneur or they're just someone who works a job or they're a student or whatever, what words of encouragement based on your own journey, based on you being a successful entrepreneur, do you have any words for them for motivation, encouragement, maybe something you would tell your younger self, anything like that?
Yeah, there's a lot of things I tell my younger self. The bigger one is, the biggest one I think is put yourself around other entrepreneurs. I feel like I spent too many years or moments trying to convince my brother to go into business with me or convince my coworkers to go with me. You know, entrepreneurs create businesses. So you need to find a way to get around other entrepreneurs or at least other people who want to start businesses and legitimately want to do it. A lot of people are in game. So that's a big one. Nike's trademark, Just Do It, is huge in entrepreneurship. Like you're going to learn so much quickly by doing something, failing, learning from those mistakes, adjusting them and getting better. So many people want to build the perfect business plan or they want to have everything hashed out or have the perfect product and they're afraid of launching. Well, you don't get a perfect product until you launch and you get that feedback from your customers. And then I could probably give for someone who's like thinking about hiring their first employee or building their team. There's this book called Traction and Rockefeller Habits. Like those two guides are going to help you get the right talent into your organization and the right kind of structure that allows your team members to thrive. I think that held us back like 18 months by not having the right processes to be able to bring in the right people. So those will be my three ones for like before getting started, starting, and then as you're established.
Awesome. Eric, where can people find you online?
Well, I'm the only Eric Bandholtz in the world. Fantastic. So if you Google me, it's me. There is like a German Eric, but he spells it E-R-I-C-H. Okay. But my last name, Bandholtz, is my Twitter handle. That's my preferred one. But really, I prefer to you do is invest in yourself, go to beardbrand.com, grab a product. They start off at like $9 or something like that and start your journey of investing in yourself. So that would be my favorite thing for you to do. But if you just want to shoot me a tweet, that I'd also be down for that.
No doubt, man. Eric, thank you so much for coming on the show, man. It's been really, really good to talk to you. And everyone, check him out, beardbrand.com.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. And this has flown by. Appreciate it.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at HereYouAreAZ.com.